It's out of the Jason Rancher, brought to you by Robbins & Company Structural Moving and Foundation Repair. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. Producer Darren, I would love to find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
We weren't even a full 24 hours into Barbara Bush's death, and the floodgates online opened for every single troll with Wi-Fi that reaches their mom's basement. They go online, they call Barbara Bush a whole host of horrible names, dismissing the fact that some people are mourning, dismissing the fact that she was, in fact, well-liked, instead deciding to call her a racist and a murderer and a war criminal and all these other things that you generally expect anonymous trolls to do, because that's what anonymous trolls do. And yet then Shama Sawant, Seattle City Councilwoman, jumps into the fray because she gets mad. The official Twitter account for the Women's March sent out a tweet that simply said, "Hey, rest in peace and power, Barbara Bush." Why might they do that? Well, because Barbara Bush, even though she is clearly on the right of where women's marchers are, Barbara Bush was a powerful woman, an influential woman, a well-loved woman, a well-respected and non-controversial female leader in this country who did a lot, not just as first lady, but after. And so they decided to offer just what is basically a rote response. Sawant didn't like that. She got mad. She got really mad. She tweeted out, "This is terrible. Women's March organizers have helped lead historic protests since Trump's election, but this tweet shows how, without a political compass, even well-meaning progressives can end up giving cover to the ruling class and ultimately undermining struggles against oppression. Her tweet is a disgrace, and it also makes no sense. We don't have a ruling class. We don't have a ruling class in this country. I know she likes the United States less and less every single day. She's not able to fundamentally change it. But she doesn't know what it is she's talking about." And this is the kind of heartless, tasteless tweet that reminds us what Shama Sawant is all about. What does a tweet like this accomplish exactly? What do you think her message accomplishes? If you're trying to think about it from a branding perspective or from a strategic perspective of her movement, what exactly does a tweet like that do? Sure, maybe it gets like the 12 people excited that would normally get excited at this kind of despicable tweet. But what about like everybody else? Because all it does, and I suppose the glass half full aspect of this controversy, is that it pushes her back into the fringe corners of society. Because the only people who support tweets like what Shama Sawant put out there are the fringe extremists, who no one wants anything to do with. No one wants to be friends with someone like this unless you're already that kind of despicable person. No one wants to get in bed, politically speaking, with someone like that because it brings you down as well. Push aside the lack of good manners. Push that aside for a moment. Because she's never had good manners. That's not what she's about, and that's okay. You don't have to have good manners. I don't really care about that. But push that aside. This shows a tremendous lack of empathy. And it kind of makes you seem like a sociopath. How petty can you possibly be? How petty can you be so close to someone's death? Was the Women's March movement somehow put back because of that tweet that they sent out? Did somehow all of a sudden all the progress they feel like they've been making, has that gone away because she sent out a tweet? No, of course not. This is disgusting. This is absolutely disgusting. And it's good that she got ratioed on Twitter. Ratioed generally means more people were responding to the comment than liking or retweeting. I don't know how many retweets it got. Certainly didn't get a lot of likes. But I did see a lot of comments, including coming from people on the left who said, "This is kind of disgusting. This is kind of disgraceful. Shame on you." Speaking of shame, we have an update on the story I brought you yesterday of a monster of a professor over at Fresno State University in California. The professor's name is Rhonda Girard. She ripped Barbara Bush on Twitter yesterday, saying Barbara Bush was a generous and smart and amazing racist who, along with her husband, raised a war criminal. F out of here with your nice words. She said she felt good that George W. Bush felt bad that his mom had died. She then tagged her boss in one of the tweets and said, she bragged actually, she kind of rubbed it in everyone's faces, that she can't be fired because of her comments, which was meant to troll a whole bunch of people. Now, I actually assumed that she was right, that she couldn't be fired as a tenured professor because of those comments. She couldn't be fired. Professors can't be fired in general because of protected speech on public colleges. But here's the thing. Even though she's a dumpster fire of a human being, and I thought that she might actually be protected, it turns out she might not be so protected. In fact, there's reason to believe that, according to the Washington Post, quote, her future interactions with students may be in question. They had to have a press conference yesterday to address the issue. Here's Fresno State Chief Academic Officer Dr. Lynette Zelzeny.
So the faculty, tenured or otherwise, are all, again, represented by a collective bargaining agreement. They're heavily unionized. And again, the technical question you're asking me is does tenure mean that you technically cannot be fired? And the answer to that is no.
And they go on to say that we have a process in place to get rid of teachers who somehow violated the tenets of their agreement. Now, I don't know if that's the case here. I do know this. This witch of a woman who was so proudly bragging about how nasty she's being towards Barbara Bush, she put her Twitter on private, which is step number one, because it turns out people started to go through all of her other tweets, and she had some very questionable tweets, including some potentially anti-Semitic tweets. She took down her photo from her Twitter feed, so it sounds like she's not really all that proud anymore. She's not bragging all that much anymore about her stupid comments. And now in her bio, she says she's currently on leave from Fresno State. I believe she was already on leave beforehand, so she was kind of pretending to be an active professor there. But what's making all of this worse, and I think this is where the firing might actually take place, because this is not protected speech per se. Before she goes private on her Twitter account, she put out a cell phone number for people to call. She said that it belonged to her. She said, hey, you know what? Because people were trying to find out her office phone number. She goes, here's my phone number. And then if you called the number, it went to the emergency crisis hotline for the state of Arizona, which means her petty little stunt there was responsible for tying up the lines on the emergency crisis hotline for Arizona. So while people were trying to call, maybe they were suicidal and they needed someone to talk to, the phone line might have been completely filled with people who were complaining about this pathetic excuse for a human being. That seems like it's a fireable offense. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Follow up.
Dick's Sporting Goods will be destroying all the guns and accessories that it said it was going to stop selling in late February because of the shooting in Stoneman Douglas. So they're going to be destroying everything. Good thing Dick's Sporting Goods didn't say they would stop selling books. I suppose that's a plus. Might not have been a really good PR move for them. Back in January, Dick's Sporting Goods CEO Edward Stack explained why he made this decision to stop selling all these long rifles that he decided to stop selling. Here's an interview he did with Fortune Magazine.
We think it's the right thing to do. We, after Parkland, we were so disturbed and saddened by what happened in Parkland that we said we need to do something. And we talked about what we needed to do, and we felt that we needed to make a statement that we will no longer sell assault-type rifles, high-capacity magazines, and a few other things. And our hearts went out to those kids and to their parents. And, you know, everybody talks about thoughts and prayers going out to them, and that's great. But that doesn't really do anything. And we felt that we needed to take a stand and do this.
Don't pander to people. Don't condescend. It's great, but it doesn't do anything. Okay, then why is it great? You don't explain that. Why is it what you're doing is great? Were you actively selling guns to bad guys with the intent to kill? Is that what Dick's Sporting Goods used to do? Okay, good. I'm glad they stopped doing that. The move, of course, didn't come without any backlash. The company faces now two lawsuits over the age limit requirement, because you can't buy until you're 21 at Dick's, and yet there are many states in this country that allow for age discriminations lawsuits to move forward based on ages under the age of 40. Because usually when we're talking about age discrimination, we're talking about people over the age of 40. Well, in states like Oregon and in Michigan, you actually have a right to not be discriminated against based on your age at the tender age of 18. My only question for them is, Because look, if they don't want to sell the guns, you know, they can either suffer the consequences in the marketplace for doing so or thrive because they did so. Why not just donate the guns to law enforcement? Why not give it to them? Actually save some dollars for our law enforcement, unless you don't want law enforcement to have guns either. That would have been a better move for me. You want to send me a text, 1-800-465-8770, 1-800-465-8770, the KTH hotline, brought to you by None Better Tax Resolution. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. We are live this morning. It's Thursday morning in the Online Trading Academy studio. Don't forget, we've got a Freedom Series event coming up on Tuesday at the Edmonds Center for the Arts, the Performing Arts Center. I actually did a site visit yesterday, and it's phenomenal. Every single seat in this venue is outstanding. Literally every single seat. And I was testing out the different sight lines because we were doing some staging just to get our video monitor set and figure out where we're going to put all, because the stage is massive. And so where we're going to set up the panelists, which include me, Todd Herman, Dave Ross from Cairo Radio, and King County Sheriff Mitzi Johanknik alongside moderator Brandy Cruz from Q13. I was just going through each and every one of the seats or you know, the different sections. They're all outstanding. And we've got a few seats left. We just released about 40 tickets, I believe, or so in the balcony section, which we were originally going to use internally for our sales staff and other staff members. We've said, we love you. We love that you get us sponsors on this station. But we love our listeners even more. So we were able to release these tickets. They're only $10. You're already going really, really fast. I'm telling you, the balcony seats are really, really, really sweet. So be sure to purchase yours today at ktth.com. If you're a cheapskate, or perhaps you're feeling lucky, you can also enter to win. We're giving away four pairs of tickets. I've got the link up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/JasonRantsShow. Or if you send me a text with the keyword contest, to the number 1-800-465-8770. Again, send the word contest to the number 1-800-465-8770. We'll go ahead and send you a link so you can enter to win. We're going to announce, if you've won, we'll tell you tomorrow throughout the day that, hey, cool, look at you, you got tickets. So go to ktth.com to purchase your tickets if you want to be able to pick out your seats. And remember, free parking. It's going to be a blast. Creepy Ted Lieu is a congressman from the state of California. And I believe he's near San Diego. He's Southern California. And he is desperate to become a Twitter celebrity, which is weird because he mocks Donald Trump all the time for all of his tweets. And yet Creepy Ted Lieu does exactly the same thing. He ended up having to delete a tweet that he sent, because when you are desperate to become a Twitter celebrity, you end up saying really, really, really stupid things on Twitter. And he said something, yep, really, 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 really stupid. And he sent this tweet to Kyle Kashev, who is a pro-Second Amendment kid from Stoneman Douglas. He's one of the kids who holds views that are different from David Hogg and Cameron Caskey and what's her name? Emma Gonzalez. And he's virtually being ignored by the media. Fox News will have him on, and some blogs will talk to him. Ben Shapiro does a lot with him, but that's pretty much it. And so Kyle was getting into it with Ted Lieu on Twitter, and then inexplicably, and I went back and I looked at the context as best as I could, despite the fact that he deleted that Ted Lieu deleted the tweet. I have no idea whatsoever where this came from. Other than I think Kyle must have said something negative about California, because this is what Ted Lieu said. California has now grown to the sixth largest economy in the world. We have a low budget surplus and record low unemployment. When you get to 21, come here and experience our awesome cannabis. But in the meantime, you can have butter beer at the amazing Universal Studios in California. And so Kyle looked at that tweet, probably like a lot of us, and like, wait, what? When you get to 21, come here and experience our awesome cannabis. So Kyle responded, was I just encouraged by a congressman to smoke weed when I'm 21? Yeah, legally, but still, holy smikey, Batman. So Ted Lieu responded, I've now read the comments to my response to you. While I am proud of California's legal cannabis law, I can see why saying this to you can be misinterpreted because you are not 21. I hereby apologize. You should listen to your parents. I will hereby delete the prior tweet. I don't understand why he sent that tweet out. What is that supposed to mean? Why would you invite anybody who's a kid to go to your state to smoke weed? And what does that have to do with anything that you were talking about? Maybe that explains Ted Lieu's stupid, crazy tweets all the time. He's high out of his mind. You're listening to The Jason Rantz Show right here on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM in the Greater East Side. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM in the Greater East Side. As the country debates gun control and school safety, students from Parkland aren't the only ones whose names are being used to justify laws tightening access to guns. Still fresh in everyone's minds is the tragedy in Newtown at Sandy Hook, where a monster used his mother's stolen guns to murder 20 children. One of those innocent, sweet victims was Jesse Lewis, just 6 years old at the time. And rather than respond with abject anger, which is how probably most of us would react, Jesse's family has turned to forgiveness and charity. But that doesn't mean that they're all okay with Jesse's name being used to justify gun control or stop certain solutions to gun violence. Jesse's older brother, JT Lewis, he's the founder of NewtownHelpsRwanda.org. He joins me now. JT, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So your brother's name, whether directly or indirectly, is being used to push gun control legislation. Generally speaking, personally, what's your reaction to that?
Well, that happens after tragedies like this. All of our names get grouped together and used to push agendas and raise money for different groups. Of course, I'm pro Second Amendment. I think it's important for our own self-protection. And these things happen after shootings. We all use our emotions to try to pass policy, and that's just not the way to go. Because we really look at the facts, more gun laws, I know some gun laws are important, but a lot of these shootings are happening and people are getting guns illegally. If you look in Parkland, if the authorities had reported through the proper channels, the guy would never have been able to get guns. So more gun laws really is not the answer, but my solution would be armed guards in schools. I think that is the perfect short-term solution to preventing more of these tragedies from happening.
And yet, when that topic came up, as it was pushed out there originally after Sandy Hook by the NRA, and then it was taken up again by President Trump after Stoneman Douglas, there was this natural pushback from a lot of the kids at Stoneman Douglas who were victims who were there during the shooting. What's your message to them?
Well, it's going to be uncomfortable at first. I compare it to after 9/11, TSA started to come around, and now we have to go through airport checks and these sort of things. And it's going to be something we have to get used to. But eventually in the future, you know, with reduced mass shootings, We're gonna get used to it, and it'll be okay. I mean, people ask, "Do you wish that there had been an armed guard at the school when your brother was killed?" Yeah, I definitely do. It would have stopped it. It would have minimized the damages.
What do they say to that?
There's just no response. I mean, I couldn't tell you. There's no response. They don't know what to say to that because it destroys their whole argument.
Yeah. When you woke up and you learned the news of what was happening in Parkland at Stoneman Douglas, what were you thinking?
Well, I was sad because I knew what all the families were about to go through. It's a horrible thing, but you also know here comes the push to get rid of the Second Amendment, to ban all guns, and also foundations start popping up out of nowhere raising money in their dead children's names for themselves, and I hate that too. So
how so?
Well, in Newtown, after the shooting, there were about 100 foundations that opened up, raising money for the victims' families. Mm-hmm. I think like two of them ended up giving money to the families. The rest of them kept the money.
Wow.
And there have been investigations into those, and some of the money's been released, but it's
mm-hmm.
it causes greedy people.
Yeah, no kidding. Just joining me, I'm talking with JT Lewis. He's the founder of NewtownHelpsRwanda.org. He is joining me this morning to talk about the reaction to the shooting in Selma Douglas, but still the shooting at Sandy Hook, where he lost his younger brother, Jesse. Tell us about Jesse.
Well, Jesse was actually known as being a hero when the shooting happened. He's directly responsible for saving 9 of his classmates' lives. The shooter came into his classroom, started shooting. He had to reload the gun, and in that interval, Jesse yelled out to his fellow classmates to run, and they did, 9 of them did, and then the shooter reloaded and killed the rest of the people in the room.
When you see how some people are still reacting to what happened in Sandy Hook, what goes through your mind? Do you feel like you're part of the conversation, or do you feel like your view is not being listened to?
My view is definitely not given the same amount of light as some of the Parkland activists, because it doesn't push an agenda other than armed guards in schools, which is important. That's really all I have to say. It's a shame. I would like to be given more airtime, be given a voice, but we'll see what happens.
Well, and you have been getting the opportunity, certainly in the last month or so, it seems like, to meet some senators and congresspeople to give your take on things. Who have you met with, and how have those conversations gone?
My last trip, I met with Senator Lindsey Graham and Senator Orrin Hatch. Those are two of the big names we met with. They're supportive of what we're doing. I can't speak for them, of course, but
sure.
They're very supportive. You know, they're passing laws like the Stop School Violence Act, which it doesn't have anything to do with guns, but it's an important law. I mean, they're doing really good work, and you don't see that because the media doesn't report it. But good things are happening.
Well, Senator Marco Rubio is just getting a ton of criticism coming from some of the Parkland students, the Parkland Five, the ones that appear on CNN almost every single day and have for the last month or so. Do you think that criticism of him is fair because he takes money from the NRA?
No, and he tried to explain it, and he did a good job, even though he was getting booed on the stage. He's not going to turn down a donation from someone who supports his own political views. I mean, that would just be moronic. And he is, even to this day, I might meet with him when I go back to D.C., he is still working on legislation that will prevent another shooting.
I mean, he's
trying to help, and he's getting, you know, absolutely obliterated by the media, and it's just not fair.
Is the NRA a terrorist organization?
No, and my favorite quote is, the NRA is the only organization that gets blamed by something its constituents don't do.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not at all responsible for these shootings. That's all I'd say about that.
So this week we've heard from David Hogg, who again is one of the Parkland Five from CNN. He's called on a boycott of 2 investment funds because they invest in gun manufacturers. Obviously, he's gone after Laura Ingraham in the past. That was a temporary success for the ad boycott, but her numbers are up. At least one of the advertisers that pulled out is back, and they apologize for making their decision based on incomplete information. What's your message to David?
Well, first of all, I'm going to buy some more Vanguard. But the boycotts don't work because people start to realize that his boycotts are attacking people who disagree with his views, and that's not good civil discourse. If he wants a solution, he needs to listen to all the sides, take all the facts together, and then make reasonable legislation out of that. But just attacking people because you disagree with their views, it doesn't work. It's not common sense.
Now, after what ended up happening to your brother and what your family has had to endure since Sandy Hook, your mother has come out and says she has forgiven Adam Lanza, and she's leading with forgiveness. I don't know if I would ever be able to do anything remotely as kind as she is. How, when you had that conversation with her, did you understand where she was coming from?
I did. I think people are shocked that she was able to forgive Adam Lanza. I'm shocked. That's amazing. And she started a foundation, Jesse Lewis Choose Love Movement, and it's education reform.
Mm-hmm.
So she has a program that it's all over the place now. It's in like 55 countries, And it's basically teaching kids to choose love, and it's preventing another, you know, more mass shooters. Kids have come up to her and said, "You've saved my life with your program." So I'm amazed. I'm very proud of her. It's great stuff she's doing.
Do you offer forgiveness of Adam Lanza?
I do, in the sense that I know he was mentally unstable and he was crying out for help his whole life. The signs were there, just like in Parkland. He wrote books about how he wanted to kill children in his first grade classroom. He did this in, I think it was third grade, actually. Stuff like this constantly. He planned this thing for years. So if the proper steps were taken, if the authorities, that's another thing, authorities need to be trained about how to handle people like this.
Mm-hmm.
So if the proper steps were taken, just like in Parkland, it could have been prevented. And so for that reason, I feel some sympathy for him.
And so obviously your mom has been doing some charitable work, but so have you. You've founded an organization called Newtown Helps Rwanda, newtownhelpsrwanda.org, for people who want to donate. Why Rwanda?
Well, a few weeks after the shooting, we're all, you know, feeling horrible, very low. And some kids from Rwanda reached out, and these are kids who have had their whole families killed in the genocide in 1994. And they reached out, and they told us, basically, you will feel happiness again. It'll always be painful, but you'll find joy again in life. And so I thought, how can I give back to these kids for helping me in my time of need? And I realized, so all these kids have one thing in common. They never got to finish their educations because the genocide happened. So I decided to raise some money selling rubber bracelets at school. And after a month, we were able to Skype back and tell Betty, the original person I talked to, that she was going to college for a year.
Wow.
And since then, we've raised the next 3 years. We've built fish farms and poultry farms in Uganda. And we've worked in America a little, too, with kids and education.
That's phenomenal. That's insane. Where do you see this organization going?
Well, they would like to expand. We're still working in Uganda and Rwanda with those original mm-hmm. people. In Uganda, they're former child soldiers, so they definitely need our help.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of work that we've done in America, too. I'm looking into, when I expand, going into the orphaned, kids of soldiers who died in war.
Wow.
That's probably the next step.
So again, newtownhelpsrwanda.org. Go there now. Please donate to JT Lewis and support the work that he's doing in his brother's memory. Last question for you is, really, what do you want to say to the audience out there on the topic of gun control and student safety that maybe is not necessarily being discussed with much urgency or not given much attention to, that you just need to put out there?
I think it's incredibly important that when we try to make policy, we do it not out of emotion, but out of fact. The fact is, armed guards are just the best short-term solution to curbing this problem. I've been advocating for it for a while now. If there were an armed guard at Sandy Hook, I feel confidently that less kids would have been killed, if not no kids at all.
Yeah.
It's just a simple fact, and I hope people start to look into this, start to talk to their legislators, and we'll get this thing passed.
I've been talking this morning with JT Lewis. He's the founder of NewtownHelpsRwanda.org. He lost his younger brother, Jesse, at Sandy Hook. He has not been getting as much media attention as he deserves because the media has been focused on one particular narrative, which happens to be an anti-gun narrative. We don't have that narrative on this show. We are pro-Second Amendment, but more importantly, we're pro keeping kids safe, and we don't say no to certain solutions just because they happen to be in line with maybe what the NRA might support or what President Donald Trump might support and what might Republicans support. So JT Lewis, I appreciate you spending some time with me this morning. I appreciate you sharing your story, which I have to imagine, no matter how many years passes between the tragedy in San Diego, doesn't get easier. So I really, really appreciate you sharing your story this morning.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rancho. Again, go to newtownhelpsrwanda.org. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show live from the Online Trading Academy studio. Your text messages at 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. The KTH hotline brought to you by None Better Tax Resolution. If you want to join the conversation, you can also go on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Jason Rantz Show. Don't forget, Freedom Series Tuesday, tickets on sale, KTTH.com. Amazon has cut a deal with Best Buy, which lets Amazon exclusively sell their Amazon Fire Smart TVs at physical retail stores. This summer, Best Buy is going to start selling 10 4K and HD Fire TV Edition television models from Insignia, which is the in-house brand for Best Buy, and for Toshiba. The Amazon TVs will have Amazon Fire already built in because the way it currently exists, it's like a dongle. Is that what those are called? You just got to plug it in right through the USB Fire Stick.
Oh, yeah. Or like a, yeah. Is that, are you confirming?
I was right. It's a dongle.
No one calls it a dongle.
That's what it is. What are you, supposed to call it? It's a dongle. You plug it in and it's a, okay, but it's a, the stick is a dongle is all I'm saying. So you plug it in. This one is going to have it all internally, which means you get to, it's like every other smart TV out there. There's nothing really exciting about this from my perspective because Amazon Fire, what it the TV stick does basically what Google Chromecast does and all these other ones do. The only interesting thing about this is that you're selling it at a brick and mortar store, which shows you how much Amazon is serious about becoming a company that's a little bit bigger than simply selling online. Now, we saw them personally getting into the brick and mortar store like market with their bookstore. And now they're taking advantage of pre-existing electronic stores, which they'll probably end up just buying because Best Buy is a horrible company. I've never, ever, ever in the history of going to Best Buy had a good experience at Best Buy. And so I do wonder if there's going to be a little bit of a backlash here in the sense of maybe hitting at the Amazon brand. Because if I go on Amazon.com or I use my Amazon Echo or whatever it is, I have a really seamless experience. For the most part, I have a seamless experience, don't really have any problems. But now all of a sudden, I take that expectation of the seamless Amazon experience, and I go to a Best Buy, I show up wanting to buy a TV, but I'm spending 20 minutes waiting for Rick, the 19-year-old with blue hair, to finish having a conversation with 14 other employees at Best Buy about the party he was just at or the Xbox game he just bought. That kind of sullies the whole experience. The wonderful thing about Best Buy is if you just know what you want and don't want to talk to anybody ever or even have them make eye contact with you, it's a good experience up until when you have to pay, when they only have one person at the register who also isn't really paying attention. So up until that last moment, it's really good. You just walk in, you get what you want, then you wait for 20 minutes before you get to leave. The most useless employees in the world work at Best Buy. I don't know why Amazon would want to get into bed with such a horrible company. Best Buy is where you go for your first job when you know you're not going to go anywhere in life, so you might as well literally start at the bottom. And then, weirdly enough, work your way down. Because that's what Best Buy is. The people who work at Best Buy who get out within like a month or two, they're the ones who realize what Best Buy is making them. The other ones, the ones who have no future, they stay there for a very long time. The other big news that's Amazon related, it was just revealed. Bezos revealed Amazon has 100 million Prime members. This is the first time we've actually gotten a hard number on the Prime membership. That's awesome for Amazon. I want Amazon to do well because it helps the region. It's responsible for so many tax dollars coming into this region. It's responsible for so many people working in this region and elsewhere. So I want them to do well. I'm just scared that being associated with Best Buy is gonna bring that stock down a little bit, but we'll see. You're listening to the Jason Rancho, 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages.